On today's edition of Locked On Nets, Josh Bass is back with Marcus Barahal from his European excursion. Talk about the Nets' heartbreaking loss to the Charlotte Hornets, Devontae Graham's ascendance, and Spencer Dinwiddie's continued impressive play coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass. It's a bittersweet episode here, bitter because we are recording this after a pretty tough loss by the Nets to the Charlotte Hornets. This is the type of game they've been pulling out recently. We're not able to get this one done, 113-108 defeat, but on the happy end, it is a little sweet because the return of the legend, my co-host, and most importantly, my friend, Marcus Barahal from his extravaganza in Europe. Marcus, good to have you back.
Josh, it's good to be back.
I know. It's good to hear your voice. I'll do a little inside baseball here, as that I did run into you last night and saw you perform at a comedy show.
You did.
But this is our first podcast together.
Yeah, your coworkers were there too. One of them, she was very nice. She said she listened to the podcast. So shout out to them also.
Yeah, shout out to them. You get to meet some of the crew, and your buddy gave me a couple free drinks. Hopefully no one from the pits listening, and we'll get Rob in trouble.
Oh, wow. You could have just not named him, but...
yeah. They know what kind of crew you hang out with.
That's
there.
That's true. The Cretans I associate myself with.
Yeah. So I know the listeners very much missed you while you were in Europe doing your scouting, of course. Any highlights of the trip that you can share for us?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great trip. I'm trying to think if there were any basketball-related highlights. I did a couple of times just, like, either on, like, a train or just walking around. I did see, like, a couple random, like, European teens carrying basketballs. And I did want to just, like, follow them and, like, completely abandon any plans I had to just see. Maybe I could find the next great prospect for us, but... all these people I saw were like around my height, which is like 5'11", so probably not. So I decided to just continue with my trip as planned. So, you know.
Yeah, that's good. You could have found the next Devontae Graham, and the Nets could sure have used one tonight.
Yeah, they definitely could have. He was insane. He's had such a good season.
Yeah, so let's dig into this game a little bit. So the Nets got off to a really good start. Jared Allen was playing very well. They were able to actually extend their lead with the bench, is something that we haven't been able to say much during even this recent hot stretch. Theo Pinson got going in the first half, was draining some really nice threes, getting to the basket. All was well in Nets land. It looked like they were on their way to another victory. But the second half really was just a struggle for them. You know, Miles Bridges got going, similar to Jeremy Grant in that Denver game. A role player just gets going from three and can't miss. He hit three threes in a row. PJ Washington was doing a lot of damage, but the main guy was Devontae Graham. I mean, 40 points. I can't think of another player who has come, maybe like Pascal Siakam last year, so that's not even fair to say, but who's come out and had such a meteoric rise despite being unheralded coming out of college, where he was a good player at Kansas, but no one expected him to be this in the pros.
Yeah, Graham he's incredible, and it's the efficiency, too. Like, he had 40 points, and he only took 21 shots. He was hitting everything from three. He got to the line a ton. He had 11 free throw attempts in addition to 12 three-point attempts. It seemed like anything the Nets tried, like, even down the stretch on those last couple possessions, Garrett Temple, like, had a hand up. Joe Harris was, like, sticking with him. Like, the Nets weren't playing bad defense on Graham. The only thing that they could have done that they didn't was maybe try to double him and force someone else to beat them, because everyone else on the Hornets, like, really did not do much. Like, Bridges, who you mentioned, had that little flurry in the comeback in the third quarter. He was still 4-for-16 for the game. Terry Rozier was just, like, not shooting the ball particularly well. He was 5-for-15. Like, there wasn't really anyone else who it felt like could get their own basket, like, whenever they wanted in the way that Graham was doing. So, I mean, I'm sure this was, like, discussed in the huddle and whatnot, but, like, maybe doubling him to try to get the ball out of his hands was something they should have done more.
Yeah, no, and it's funny because when Kemba Walker was on the Hornets, he would always give the Nets problems. And now you have another small guard with deep shooting range. And yeah, I mean, that last play where he put the Hornets up five and kind of put the game out of reach, like, that was a deep three and it was contested off balance and he just hit an insane shot. So, like, that's great defense there. Nothing really you can do about that. Yes, maybe you double team, but I feel like the Charlotte guys, they're not great, but they can definitely handle a 4-on-3, especially when you have good athletes like PJ Washington and Miles Bridges, and then Biombo, who can crash the glass and take advantage if there's no one near him, basically.
Yeah, I think that, like, those plays down the stretch weren't the reason the Nets lost the game. They lost it during, like, late in the second quarter and into the third quarter and the early fourth quarter, when Charlotte really just, like, started slowly chipping away at that lead, and then eventually, with that flurry in the third quarter, took things over. And the Nets had, like, a pretty funky lineup out there when Charlotte was hitting all those threes that, I don't know, it was like Pinson, Musa, Shumpert, and Nwaba, and DJ.
That's
like
the
all
lineup
out there.
Now. You missed a lot. I know. You missed a lot since your vacation.
It's maybe try to stagger that a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like when you're playing even, that's fine. You can have those guys out there. But when your lead's getting cut from 13 to like 3, then maybe just say throw Dinwiddie out there for a couple minutes or mix it up and stop the bleeding. I think the problem for the Nets was that Dinwiddie had a really good game and came alive at the end, especially getting to the basket and hit a couple threes. He did miss some crucial free throws, which was unfortunate. And the Nets as a whole did not shoot well from the line, only 22 of 33, and that could definitely make a difference. But he really just didn't get enough help. You know, Joe Harris had a couple nice buckets late, but only goes 1 of 8 from 3. Very uncharacteristic for him. Torian Prince was absolutely awful, 2 of 12 from the field. Like, especially in the fourth quarter, he had two drives that went nowhere, and he threw up a terrible shot. And then his jumpers just looked completely out of whack. He didn't look like he had any confidence on it, or he was just tentative and throwing shots up there just for the sake of it. And it was tough because when you're Kenny and you don't have a ton of options, if your role players like Prince and Harris aren't hitting, it's going to be really tough for you to win games, even if you're playing a team where you overall have an advantage against the Charlotte type.
Yeah, and that's why the Hornets were able to go to that zone as much as they were, because Prince and Harris weren't really making them pay and busting that zone the way that they typically would. Like, there were multiple times where the Nets would swing it around. Like, the goal of Charlotte was to get the ball out of Dinwiddie's hands, and they were doing that. And the ball would get swung to Prince in the corner, and he would just miss it every single time. And yeah, like, if that's going to be the case, then Charlotte can play the zone against the Nets, and it can be effective. And it can be a way to get the ball out of Dinwiddie's hands and a way to stop that pick and roll with Jared Allen, who played really well in the first half, had 16 points at the half to lead all scorers, and then he had one shot attempt in the second half. And so, like, part of that is the Charlotte scheme, but also, like, I don't know, the Nets should probably try to do a better job to get him involved. He's been so good the last few games, and it felt like he just wasn't really utilized down the stretch except, like, as a screener for ball handlers.
Yeah. No, it's always tough. I mean, this is kind of the same problem dating back to when Brook Lopez would be the Nets' best player, and he dropped 10 points, 12 points in the first quarter and look unstoppable. And then gradually throughout the game, it's just one harder to get those guys the ball, and as defenses tighten up, like, those easy pick-and-roll throws aren't there anymore, and especially for a guy like Jared Allen, who his main role in offense is to kind of suck in the defense, and if it's open, the guards find him. If it's not there, he's not a guy that you're going to throw the ball to and let him drive or have him post up or shoot a three, obviously. So he's kind of a one-trick pony, and he's someone that can definitely be taken away if the defense knows what it's doing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. He's not like we were saying about Charlotte, where they really just have one guy who can create his own shot. Like, as well as the Nets role guys and guys like Allen and Harris have played, that's kind of the case for them too with Dinwiddie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. Marcus, want to get your thoughts on a couple of the major storylines that have developed really since your time away. They said, okay, Marcus is gone in Europe. Now let's really kind of where the rubber meets the road on some of these big hot ticket items. One is been Kyrie Irving's injury and really Spencer Dinwiddie's ascent. Obviously, none of us expected Kyrie's injury to linger this long. We still don't have a ton of clarity on it, but he hasn't been cleared for contact work yet. What have been your thoughts on how the Nets have handled that?
Yeah, I mean, I did talk about this a little bit before leaving because it had been a decent stretch without him, and it's up to like I think 13 games now, which they're 9-4 in without him. So obviously they're playing well. Dinwiddie has been just a monster. Like I feel like if the All-Star game were like happening right now, he'd be like a clear All-Star. And it's been really interesting because it's very similar to what happened last year, where like a key player like LeVert or Dinwiddie had some time out also, but just like guys stepping up when another guy goes down. And that's kind of been like the mantra of this Nets team for the last like year and a half, is that anyone can come up, anyone can be the guy. And Dinwiddie has obviously shown that he's like very capable. And I was talking about this actually with a coworker the other day, because I heard you bring it up in one of the podcasts, I think, while I was gone, that he should probably continue starting even when everyone is back healthy, and maybe try to bring LeVert off the bench. I think that's really interesting. And yeah, I love the way he's been playing. And the more interesting side of it to me is the way that his play has impacted Jared Allen. Because I thought Allen like started pretty slowly, we both thought, at the beginning of the year. But it seems like with Dinwiddie's rise has also come Jared Allen's rise. And I don't know if that's like related to the fact that it's Dinwiddie and not Kyrie, and maybe it's just more familiarity, maybe they have better chemistry or something. But for whatever reason, like Jared Allen's play has gotten a lot better also. And I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to different types of players. So like, what we always say this, Dinwiddie is much less comfortable in the mid-range. He really is either looking to shoot that pull-up three off the dribble or just get all the way to the rim. And if he's kind of in that mid-range and the defense is collapsing on him, he's throwing that lob to Jared Allen. While Kyrie, if he's in the mid-range, his main thing there is that he's actually looking to score and shoot that shot, which Dinwiddie isn't. So it's more just kind of a difference of style, where Kyrie's doing a lot of probing, and at that point, it's kind of where he's pinning the defender behind him. Jared Allen's man is stuck to him, and Kyrie's more so looking for that 10 to 16 foot shot. And if, I think it's just a byproduct that the big men are going to be kind of have less scoring opportunities with Kyrie Irving as the point guard than Dinwiddie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And like, that mid-range area, like for a guy like Kyrie, is probably similar to like D'Angelo Russell, where he was looking for that little pull-up shot. And yeah, Dinwiddie's like a very analytically friendly player in terms of his shot chart, mm-hmm. where if he's not shooting a three, he's like pretty much always trying to get right to the rim, which he was doing a lot very well at the end of the game, like you said. He had that nice little like hook around Cody Zeller. And yeah, I mean, he's been playing really well. The team's been playing really well. I think that this game gave me like a little bit of flashbacks to the first like week or two of the season, in that it just felt like they couldn't hold on to a lead. But I think they've been playing better, and I think it's like sustainable.
Yeah. And also, like, one thing I think I noticed, especially in this game, like that Dinwiddie's really good at, is when he's driving, sometimes the defender will expect him to go up probably a step earlier than he does, and he takes that one extra dribble, which gives him a better angle to get that layup. So that play where he tied it up tonight, that play you mentioned where he went up against Cody Zeller, I think Zeller probably was expecting him to shoot the layup, but Dinwiddie actually takes one step, gets around him more, and ends up having a cleaner look.
Yeah, it's like anything you can do to like throw off the timing a little bit. Even like I mentioned, he had a terrible game, but like Rozier had a really nice hesitation step at one point that just kind of froze the defender as he was driving. And like, there's so much of that where like Dinwiddie is very fast and like he has a great first step and all that stuff, but it does come down to like little head fakes and that kind of trickery, which was what D'Lo got so good at last year on his drives, like, because he's not very fast either, but just like being able to
no, he's not.
Yeah, being able to like fake out the defender or just create like that tiny bit of space, that kind of creativity goes a long way.
Yeah, so tough loss, but I think we're missing the crucial point of this game, which was that the in-game buzzer was not working, and they had to use an air horn by my man Travis, who is kind of I guess he does like scoreboard stuff for the Nets for the last 8 years, but he was thrust into a major role, and Sarah and Ian were having kind of the time of their lives with him. But I loved like the air horn just popping off every so often.
It was insane. I felt like this is this is a very specific reference that it's very possible that like zero of our listeners understand, but are you familiar with like Vic Berger, who like edits YouTube videos?
Zero idea.
Okay, well he does a lot where it's like just like either debates or like he does like a lot with like Steve Harvey where it's just like hard zooms and a loud air horn that blares, and I just kept feeling like I was watching that. Again, this is probably relevant to no one listening, but bring it up just in case.
Is Travis have a potential to be that new Vic Berger type?
He could be, you know, he was blasting it, he was blaring it. It was a little jarring, which is kind of, I think, what you want from an air horn. So
I wish he was hamming it up more. Maybe we should get him on the podcast.
Yeah, I wish it was like, you know how like a slide whistle has like the, you can like kind of change the pitch and stuff. Mm-hmm. I wish that you could mix some of that in. Maybe do like a halftime like show.
Like Cody Zeller's checking in. It's a different pitch than like Theo Pinson coming in.
Yeah, there should honestly be more like just sound effects at games, not just like the music that they play. Like more like a womp womp if like it's like something happens, like an air ball or something.
Yeah, I feel like an enterprising team could really take advantage of that and make that into their own.
Yeah, I love when like in college sports they have like the band that plays little stingers and stuff. There should be a live band for pro sports too.
Agreed on that. Also, what do you think of the lack of jersey contrast? It was kind of throwing me off because the Nets were in the Bed-Stuy jerseys. Just, of course, one of 28 times this year. And then the Hornets were in the white jerseys. But I felt like, I don't know, I just want more, like, pop and contrast. At the start of the game, I was, like, kind of confused.
Yeah, you brought this up to me. I didn't find it that confusing. I felt like I was able to tell the difference. But you did mention the Bed-Stuy jerseys, which the Nets were wearing. And I actually just talked about this with someone yesterday, where it feels like the Nets are just, I don't know, like, putting just Bed-Stuy on there. It's like a little disingenuous. They don't play in Bed-Stuy. Like, I don't know. It feels like,
well, it's because Big E would be a Nets fan, right?
I know, but would he?
Yeah, I guess so. He's Mr. Brooklyn. it's like a weird thing. I feel like they're leaning into it like halfway, but like kind of with no explanation really, and it just looks a little bit out of place. I agree.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know, like if they had one for like every neighborhood in Brooklyn, like one that just said Park Slope across, wouldn't be as cool.
Park Slope. Yeah, I like that. Maybe we should Williamsburg.
Yeah.
Bushwick.
Dumbo.
Yeah, let's pitch this to your mark.
Yeah. Could sell so many more jerseys. People would have to collect them all.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're already well on their way to that. The Nets probably have more jerseys than anyone I've ever seen. And maybe I'll get a Spencer Dinwiddie jersey. I kind of want one.
Which, would you get the Bed-Stuy one, or would you get like
a... No, normal black one.
Black one, not the white one?
Not the white one. Definitely not getting the Bed-Stuy one. I don't want to like reward them for like just these incessant jerseys that they produce trying to just make an extra buck.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised you don't have like some kind of Dinwiddie merch already. He's been like...
I'm not a big jersey guy, though.
Yeah. You and I both, actually. But, like, just something. I don't know. He's been the guy for a while for us.
I know. That's true. Maybe in my commitment to the team and as the holidays approach, I'll treat myself for a Dinwiddie jersey, and I'll post a picture on our Twitter account showing it. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at LockedOnNets. Marcus is at Marcus Bearhall. I am at JMBass_. Marcus, before we wrap up, what was your favorite random NBA storyline from the past week? You were gone, but I know you're obviously following Twitter, and there was a lot of good stuff that was happening. I just want to know if you had a favorite.
Oh, wow. There was a lot of good stuff happening. That's a good question. There was one, this is like not a storyline, but there was one night where I like, because of the time difference, I woke up at like 3 a.m. or something, and there was like a random Mavericks game on, and Luka was just going off. I know, I feel like I talk about the Mavericks like every podcast, but they're
very
good.
I love them.
I do.
Just go join Nick Engstat at Locked On Mavs. He's waiting for you.
Maybe one day. If we ever do a crossover with them, I would love that. But yeah, just his continued great play. Obviously, my guy Siakam, Devontae Graham too. Honestly, I've been following him. He's been really good. Most have been following him because I picked him up in our fantasy league. But still rooting for him. He seems mm-hmm. like a good guy.
Gotcha. Yeah, you went for more like legit ones than me. I think my favorite was Chris Paul snitching on Jordan Bell to get the extra free throw, and then
a game.
Yeah, that leading to the play of, I mean, the Steven Adams amazing pass and the Schroeder finish with 1 second left. Like, that was probably one of the craziest, like, NBA sequences I've seen in a while. So that really did it for me.
Yeah, that was, like, peak Chris Paul. Like, I don't think anything could ever top that. If he won a ring, I would still want this jersey thing to be mentioned first in his, like, Hall of Fame acceptance speech.
Yes. And it should be. I think it will be our mission to make sure that happens. But we've gone off the rails here today. We'll be back in your ears very shortly. Subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. We will be there. Rate us, review us, tell us what you think of the show. And until next time, be well.
Bye.